Last blog was fire. That was a great introduction. Shkoyach. So I want to thank Avi for this opportunity to speak to you. I was in town, and the ability to coordinate and come together worked out well. And so I appreciate the opportunity to at least get some thoughts off my chest on a topic which has been near and dear to me in general, but particularly of late. It's great to see so many familiar faces, and it's wonderful to see all of you. The question of technology, the use of technology, the dangers of technology is something that I've written about, I've spoken about. I wrote an article several years ago in Klal Perspectives and more recently in the YU2Go, I think it was Shavuos last year, about this topic. I'm somebody who personally embraces technology. I try to make the best use of technology. I think it's a tool, it's an instrument, it's a vehicle that the Ribono Shel Olam, that the Almighty gave us, which can be used to advance His mission in the world to accomplish incredible good. But like many instruments and tools that God granted us, it can be used in all kinds of different ways. So technology has enhanced and enriched our lives for the good, and it's undeniable. The amount of Torah learning that technology has promoted is outstanding. YU Torah alone, what comes off of this campus and through this campus from around the world, thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of hours of Talmud Torah that's taken place that would not have or would not have at that level or in that consistency if not for things like YU Torah. But how many apps do we have where we have Kol HaTorah Kula literally at our fingertips? How much access do we have to Torah in the most outstanding ways? And not only the advancement of Torah, technology has helped our lives in other ways. I'm sure you and your generation have benefited from the interconnection of family, which I'm not that much older than you. I'd like to think of myself as not that much older than you. But we did not benefit from. So the ability to share videos and to share pictures and to FaceTime and to have family WhatsApp groups have created family unity, family reunions, hopefully family harmony in ways that didn't exist before technology. The ability to maintain friendships and relationships and interactions. And even if it's not, you know, sicha of kedusha, even if it's not conversations of the highest level, if it's sicha schulin, it's just regular opportunity to connect and to be part of something greater than yourself, it's something which is of value. So it's undeniable that technology has harnessed, or harnessing technology well, usefully, enhances and enriches our lives in very, very meaningful ways. But I think it's equally undeniable that technology is fraught with risks and with dangers and with hazards all around us. And there are some of those dangers which are blatantly obvious. You've read about it, you've heard about it, there have been asifas, huge gatherings in order to tackle it, the question of promiscuousness and lewd imagery, of temptation, of opportunity. These things are incredibly destructive to relationships, destructive to self-confidence, destructive to self-identity, and they've been spoken about ad nauseum. Not that they've been effective to the point that we need to stop talking about it, but it's not my topic for tonight. I want to talk about some of the dangers and perils of technology, which we are less aware of, which is spoken about less often, and perhaps for which there are fewer safeguards that are being put out there. So there's different reactions you can have to the challenges of technology. There can be the wholesale rejection of technology. There are individuals, there are communities who simply reject technology. They reject the use of smartphones, they reject the use of internet, they reject the use of technology. But to me, it's unrealistic, it's unsustainable, and to a degree it's foolish. Because to have a generic or wholesale rejection is the equivalent of saying nobody should have a telephone in their home because, by the way, once upon a time there were telephones in your home, they were attached to the wall, you had a home line, but can you imagine when phones came out, someone would say, don't have a telephone? Because you could say Lashon Hara. You could exchange gossip over the phone. You could use vulgarity over the phone. Nobody have a telephone. Or say, when cars were invented, don't get in a car, because a car might be a vehicle that transports you to a place that's inappropriate, and therefore don't use cars. To reject technology, to reject the internet wholesale, is the equivalent of rejecting the telephone as a tool or not using cars. And that's not what we believe. We believe in doing it judiciously, in doing it discerningly, in doing it mindfully, consciously, with intentionality, in drawing the best from what it has to offer, advancing the Ribono Shel Olam, the Almighty's vision for His world, and not falling prey to the perils that are there. So I would liken technology most to the question of fire. Fire is an indispensable asset. Where would we be without the discovery of fire? So precious is fire, people don't realize, in Havdalah, Borei Moreh Eish, is our Hakaras HaTov, our gratitude for the gift of fire and what it enables in our life is something we celebrate and we express gratitude for literally each and every week, each and every Motzei Shabbos. So fire illuminates, it provides heat, it provides energy, but fire can also scorch and it can burn and it can devastate. So technology is like fire. It can be harnessed and used for incredible good. It can be destructive. So what's the attitude we have towards fire? Little kids in school already, fire department comes and they teach them drop and roll and how to stay away and how to be careful. And there's even Jewish songs that come out Hanukkah time about being careful about fire. Fire is hot. And so on. So fire needs safeguards. Fire needs provisions. Fire needs attention. Fire needs boundaries. Fire needs mindfulness. You can't light a fire or interact with a fire if you're not sober, if you're not mindful. So technology to me is like fire. So I want to talk about three things tonight in the limited time we have, and leave time for questions or conversation or pushback if you have. And the first area I want to talk about is the question of the benefit and the challenge of technology as a great equalizer. What do I mean by technology as the great equalizer? So the great Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis, in his book Other People's Money and How Bankers Use It, I didn't read the book, but it makes me sound smart to reference the book. I just know the quote. There's a quote in his book. First half of the quote no one heard of, the second half is famous. Publicity is justly commended as a remedy for social and industrial diseases. And he finished the sentence by saying, sunlight is said to be the best of disinfectants. Sunlight is the best of disinfectants. You know, you're in camp and something spills or something smells moldy or something seems gross. So you hang it outside. It needs some air. It needs some sunlight. Sunlight is the best of disinfectants. And the internet technology has given us the tools, has enabled us to shine a spotlight on an issue, to expose or to reveal corruption or dishonesty or danger or scandal that otherwise or heretofore might have gone unnoticed or ignored or might have even been excused. Technology enables us to say we're not sweeping it under the carpet. And you can't neglect it or ignore it or dismiss it. Or you can't pretend it didn't happen because you wish it weren't so. Brandeis wrote these words long before there was an internet. Long before he could have ever dreamt the sunlight that technology or internet could generate. But the internet has been able to achieve that. So there are abusers and there are manipulators and there are frauds and there are who... The internet, sometimes the cloak of anonymity of the internet, has protected the Jewish people, has protected the world, has brought down people who otherwise would have gotten away with it. The internet provides a shield of protection, of anonymity, and that you don't have to worry about necessarily retribution or revenge, and that's a very healthy thing. So the capacity for instant access to information also makes us better informed. We're able to think more critically. It empowers us to ask crucial questions. So you're going to go to the doctor. Now you can look up where did the doctor get an education? How is the doctor rated? What are the reviews of the doctor? You're going to hire a babysitter. You can go on the babysitter's Facebook page and maybe find something which would persuade you that you might want to hire a different babysitter. Right? The information age technology makes everything just a click away. And that's the sunlight, which is the disinfectant, which is healthy, which is helpful, which makes it a much safer world in some ways. So Brandeis was correct. Sunlight is the greatest disinfectant. The internet has sanitized our world in wonderful ways. It holds people accountable for their behavior and their choices and their speaking and their writings and so on. But what Brandeis didn't mention in that quote, and I admit it already, I didn't read the book, but I don't think he mentions in his book, is that while sunlight is the greatest disinfectant, unfiltered sunlight is harmful and is toxic and causes cancer. So the internet and technology, while it's made the world safer in some ways, and it's created the information age in some ways, there has never been a mass vehicle to promote lashon hara and rechilas, gossip and slander, than the internet. Nothing Another Chavetz Chaim's famous mashal of a person who came and said, I spoke Lashon Hara, I gossiped, how do I do tshuva, how do I receive atonement? And the Chavetz Chaim said, bring me a feather pillow. And then he tore a hole in the pillow and hit the pillow and the feathers went everywhere. And he said to the person, go collect all the feathers and bring them back. The person looked at the Chavetz Chaim, collect the feathers, they're everywhere, it's impossible. The Chavetz Chaim said, that's exactly right. That's Lashon Hara. When you've spoken it, when you've spread it, and it's viral. Chavetz Chaim also lived before the use of the word viral in the Chavetz Chaim day, which meant you need an antibiotic. But we understand what that means, that something goes viral. You can't collect the feathers in the pillow, and the internet has only magnified how viral something can go. And even if something is deleted, or even if something is taken down, the imprint, the fingerprints that are left are permanent, are absolutely permanent. So the internet, while being a vehicle for good, can also destroy reputations. It can destroy through innuendo and distortions and inaccuracies and false accusations. Once upon a time, thoughts and ideas and opinions were only printed if they had merit, if they were deemed worthy, if they were carefully screened by a publisher. Not that long ago, if you wanted to print something, you had to get it by an editorial team who researched whether what you were saying was true. Your credentials and your credibility, who were you to say it? Journalists had to vet their stories and fact checkers confirmed the assertions before something went to print. Authors gained credibility and readership based on their education and their expertise and their experience and based on peer review. And all of that is out the window. It's gone. We're in the era of fake news. We're in the era of fake information, of fake philosophies, of fake piskei halacha, of fake everything. Because all you need is a keyboard and an internet connection. And no one's reviewing what you're saying. There's no peer review. There's no credentials. There's no credibility. There's no research team. There's no vetting. If you have a keyboard and an internet connection, and this is one of the most disappointing things I've learned over the last several weeks, is how many, and I say this not as a judgmental, but simply as an observation, how many foolish people there are who simply because they read something, believe it or accept it as truth. How disappointing, how disheartening, how devastating that just because somebody reads it and they read it online, they think it's true. The internet is the ultimate realization of free speech. And while free speech is a democratic value and we embrace it and we love it and we promote it, but totally free speech is not a Jewish value. We subscribe to the American ideal of a free speech that doesn't stifle debate and conversation and religious rights and so on. But the Torah clearly mandates that speech is not free, that we have to regulate what comes out of our mouths as much as we do what comes in. Yisrael Salanter says it's not a coincidence that Parshas Tazria, which deals with the consequences of speaking Lashon Hara, comes immediately after Shmini. That ends with the laws of kashrus. Because the juxtaposition of the two is to communicate, said Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, that the Torah wants us to be as concerned with what comes out of our mouth as what comes into it. We believe conceptually in free speech, but it's a regulated free speech. It's a legislated free speech. We're not allowed to just say gossip or hurtful words, even if they're true. We're prohibited from revealing secrets. We can't be megala sod if somebody takes us into confidence. There's whole halachas of the internet that people don't even discuss. Gemara has a debate. Is the default that if someone tells you something, that it's public unless they say to you, it's in confidence, please don't share it? Or is the default that something is confidential unless they told you, I'm telling you this, but by the way, it's public, you can tell anyone you want. And the Gemara concludes, in Shulchan Aruch Paskins, that the default is that whatever is told to us in confidence, unless we have express permission, explicit permission to repeat it. And yet people forward emails, people post, people blog, people tweet, people share freely. My point is that while we believe in an element of free speech, we don't believe in unabated or unbridled free speech. We have rules that tell us we have to judge people favorably. We have rules that tell us we can't use vulgarity. We have rules that tell us we can't plagiarize. We have to be Omer B'Shem Omro. And the list goes on and on and on. Shlomo HaMelech tells us in Mishlei, the wisest of all men, that Mavas V'Chayim B'Yad Lashon, death and life are in the hand of the tongue, B'Yad Lashon. And if Shlomo HaMelech lived today, there's not a doubt in my mind that he would say, Mavas V'Chayim is not B'Yad Lashon, but Mavetz V'chaim is biyad, yad. That life and death are in our fingertips. They're in the way that we approach the keyboard, the way we approach our phone, what we write, what we post, what we forward, and what we share. So, the first point that I wanted to get across tonight in terms of Torah is, technology rather, is an extraordinary medium to communicate ideas and creativity, curiosity, Talmud Torah, to be a mavakesh, to be somebody who's yearning and learning and looking and growing. But the danger of Torah is it can be a vehicle to spread the most toxic, the most damaging, the most insidious ideas that are false, that are fake, that are not real. You know, it says in our parsha, Midvar Sheker Tirchak, we are mandated to distance ourselves from falsehood. And the Sefer HaChinuch and Mitzvah Ayin Dalet writes, it's the only mitzvah in the whole Torah, asay or los asay, the only positive or negative mitzvah, which we're told not just to observe it, do it or don't violate it, but we're told to place a safeguard, tirchak, to distance ourselves from it. That's how precious, that's how critical, that's how core truth is to our own dignity, to who we are, to what it means to be a tzelem Elokim. Gemara tells us in Shabbos, Nunhei, that chosamo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu is emes. We sign our John Hancock, we sign our name, and Hashem signs his name, he signs emes, truth. Hashem is pure truth. He's incapable, unable to distort truth. From HaKadosh Baruch Hu emanates authenticity, truth, integrity, honesty. And the degree to which we want to express and promote the Tzelem Elokim, the godly spirit in us, is the fidelity we have to truth. So if we distort, if we lie, if we bend the truth, if we exaggerate, but even if we're not the ones guilty of doing those things, we simply receive distortions. We accept exaggerations. We're willing to stand idly by. We're indifferent or apathetic to distortions. We are violating the very Tzelem Elokim inside us. We are denying what is the essence of God, Chosamo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Emes. The 11th chapter of Mesilas Yesharim is all about expanding this idea of what it means to be loyal, to define ourselves by truth. But it's very interesting that the Sefer HaChinuch in that mitzvah Ayin Dal, when he talks about honesty and the prohibition to lie, that midvar sheker tirchak, that not only do we have to stay away from lies or falsehood, not only do we have to stay true to truth, but tirchak, we have to distance ourselves from untruth. What mitzvah is Ayin Dalet? What's the Sefer HaChinuch commenting on? What is he talking about? So I want to read to you the Sefer HaChinuch because I think it speaks to the entire essence of this new phenomena in our time of fake news and alternative facts and distortions which have permeated every area of our life. Writes the Sefer HaChinuch, Shalalashmo tainas baldin shalob ifne baldin chaveri. You know what the mitzvah is, Ayin Dalet? That Beis Din is forbidden from hearing one litigant when the other litigant is not present. Someone takes someone else to a Beis Din. Beis Din is not allowed to hear the arguments. Beis Din is not allowed to consider the issue unless both are present. Shelo yishma adin tainas ha'echad shelo b'nei ba'al din, sh'nemer l'sis ha'shem ha'shav. V'atam, says the Sefer HaChinuch, you know why? L'fi sh'b'nei adam yedabru divrei shav shelo b'nei ba'al dinam. Because if the other person is not in the room with you, if you don't have to look them in the eye, then you'll be brazen to lie. And even if you're not going to lie outright, you'll exaggerate, you'll distort, you'll present the facts in your favor. You know, if the litigant, if the person that you're in a conflict with is in the room, you won't have the brazenness to lie. You'll feel more obligated, hopefully, you'll feel more obligated to tell the story the way it happened. But if they're not there, the presenter will distort the truth. So I always thought the halacha was that Beis Din can't hear the case unless both litigants are present, because Beis Din has to have the open mind, they have to both be there, and so on and so forth. That it was a function of Beis Din. But it's not a function of the dayanim, of the judges. It's a function of the litigants themselves. If the person you're speaking about is not there to defend themselves, if the person you're speaking about is not there to provide their version or to push back if something has been exaggerated, Beis Din can't hear them. Beis Din can't listen until they're both there. And writes the Sefer HaChinuch, Shorash HaMitzvah Yadua. The reason for this rule is well known. Ki HaShekher Nitoyev V'Ne'elach Be'enei HaKol Ein Davar Ma'os Mimenu. distortions, lies, fake news. There is nothing more repulsive. There's nothing more disgusting. There's nothing more intolerable. And whoever promotes fake news, whoever shares distortions, exaggerations, lies, whoever peddles things that aren't true, their home is cursed. I'm not sharing so-and-so should be cursed, or as compared to this, or calling on. I'm reading you a Sefer Achinach. Shashem Yisborach Kel Emes, V'chol Asher Ito Emes. God is a God of truth. And if you're with God, then you're with truth. And if you're distorting, exaggerating, manipulating the facts for pursue a specific agenda, you cannot claim to representing the side of the Almighty. The Almighty wants truth, plain and simple, pure, period. Ve'ein abracha mitzuya v'chala ela b'midamim elav b'maseyam liyosam amitiyim k'moshu kel emes. And God cannot bestow bracha. You want blessing in your life, then just tell the truth. You can never go wrong. People who lie have to remember the lie to keep up the lie. If you tell the truth, it's very easy. You don't have to remember. You just, it's the truth. You can't go wrong with the truth. Not only because it's the easiest way, it's the right way. And it's the way in which you most resemble the Ribono Shel Olam. V'alken hiziratanu haTorah laharchik min hasheker harbei, k'mo shekasu midvar sheker tirchak, v'azachira bo lashon rachok l'rav ma'usa. Why does it say distance yourself? Because it's so repulsive. Mashe lo hiskira kein b'chol shar ha'azharos. It doesn't appear anywhere else. And here's the kicker for me, the Sefer Achinach. U'mitzar harachok hizhartanu shelo natei azneinu klal l'shum davar shenechshav shehu sheker. This whole Sefer Achinach, the powerful words, mitzvah ayin dalet, are not directed just at the distorter of facts, at the one who spreads an untruth, at the one who promotes fake news. You know who it's directed at? Every one of us who read the news. Every one of us who follow social media. Every one of us who receives an email in our inbox. Shilonata azneinu, do not turn your ear at all. L'shum davar shenechshav shu sheker. If something smacks like it's not true, if you suspect it doesn't sound right, if it violates the rules of the benefit of the doubt, of researching to get to the bottom line, then we are enjoined, we are prohibited from simply accepting it as truth. Sefer Achinach is talking in the strongest terms. Midvar sheker tirchak. We have to distance ourselves, not just enough, tell the truth, don't lie. Distance yourself from lies and distance yourself from liars. Gemara says, based on a pasuk in Malachi, that our teachers of Torah have to be similar to a malach. Kemalach Hashem Tzevakos. Imarav doma lemelach Torah yevakshem ipiyu. If the person who is communicating of Torah carries themselves angelically, they don't call people names, they don't put them down, they don't judge, they don't dismiss, they don't ascribe blame, they don't pretend they're God, then try to learn Torah. But if they're not like a Malach Hashem Tzevakos, if they are not what you would picture an angel to be, angelic, giving the world more goodness and more kindness and more sweetness and more sensitivity and more love, then Torah ayivaksha mipiyu. They are not an authentic or legitimate source of Torah. The Chai Adam writes that Sheker is the Avi Avos HaTuma. Sheker is the paradigm. Sheker is the source of impurity in the world. Because lies and distortions create conflict. They create division. They create a lack of shalom. They create galus. Geula, it comes from the truth. It comes from shalom. Rav Zusha, Me'anapoli Zatzal, says on the pasuk, the Rebbe Reb Zusha, Midvar Sheker Tirchak, he reads the pasuk like this, Midvar Sheker Tirchak, that Midvar Sheker, because of words of falsehood, Midvar Sheker, because of words of falsehood, Tirchak, you become distant from Hashem. If Chosamo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emes, if the seal of Hashem, if the signature of God is truth, then if you believe lies, if you spread lies, if you promote lies, if you're not loyal to truth, then you are distanced. Midvar sheker, because of dvar sheker, tirchak. The result is that you're distanced, that you're far away from Hashem. Fake news surrounds us. Fake news is everywhere. It's hard to know the truth anymore. Whatever the issue is of the day, it's hard to get to the bottom line of what's real. There's bias in the media, and there's bias in the armchair media, known as social media. Every single person who has an internet account and a keyboard, or an internet account and a phone, is able to just say whatever they want to say. And the onus is on us to be discerning and judicious readers, to not just accept what we're reading as truth, to realize that there's exaggeration and there's falsehood, that there's gossip, that there's lashon hara, to ask ourselves, does what I'm reading match up with what I know about the person? I was debating whether to even allude to this, but I'm sure familiar with what the last couple of weeks were for me and for our shul. A person made up a lie that we were having a speaker who was a missionary. He was not a missionary, was never a missionary, we would never bring in a missionary. It advanced their agenda, which had nothing to do with the speaker. And what was shocking to me, as I said to you before, is how many people, until I didn't want to, I've made a concerted effort to be above board, to not get in the mud, to follow what I think HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants and would do. Michamocha ba'elim Hashem, michamocha ba'ilmim Hashem. Hashem's greatest strength is not when He can ultimately destroy, it's when He chooses to stay silent and above those who insult Him. It's a Gemara in Gittin with Titus HaRasha. When Titus is in the Beis HaMikdash, it says, michamocha ba'elim, michamocha ba'ilmim. Hashem could have absolutely obliterated Titus, humiliated him for all of history. Instead, Shashtel, Hashem was quiet. We have a Mesorah about being min ha-ne'alavim v'lo min ha-ovim, that we remain among those who are insulted and don't respond. It's a great schus to be able to have the opportunity to be mekayim, chazal, min ha-ne'alavim v'lo min ha-ovim, shomim cherpasim v'lo mishivim, to hear insults and to just say, it's from min ha-shamayim. It's for whatever reason it was intended. You know, there's an amazing statement of the Sefer HaChinuch on the mitzvah of lo sikam velo sitor, of not taking revenge. Sefer HaChinuch writes, you know why revenge is prohibited? Why is it prohibited? There's people who hurt you unfairly, they did wrong. Why can't I go unleash my revenge on them? Take them down. Do everything that was in my power. Why can't I take revenge? Sefer HaChinuch says revenge is a chisaron, it's a lack of emuna. It's a lack of faith. Because whatever's happening in your life, you have to say to yourself, you know what? Whoever's doing that, it's unjust, it's unfair, but they couldn't do it if the Ribono Shel Olam didn't will it. If the Almighty wanted to block them, prevent them, stop them in their tracks, this never could have happened. And if it happened, then for some reason the Almighty wants it to happen. So we hold the other party accountable. I'm not saying that if somebody hits your car, you say, oh, Hashem wanted someone to hit my car. So, I'll tell you I guess it's for me, it's Hashgacha Pratis, but not for my neighbors. Apparently, on my knock block in my neighborhood last night, 20 cars were broken into and stolen. Many of them, the make and model of my car, Honda Accord. I don't have some fancy car, Honda Accord. My car is at Fort Lauderdale Airport, because I'm here. So Baruch Hashem. So Hashgacha Pratis. But, so someone steals your car. Somebody breaks into your car. So you don't say Emuna means, okay, it's from Hashem, accept it, leave it. No, you hold them accountable, you take them to a Beis Din, you take them to a civil court when you're allowed to. You hold the person accountable, but you don't seek revenge. And the Sefer HaChinuch says, you don't seek revenge, because if you seek revenge, what you're saying is, God didn't want this to happen, that schnook made it happen, and I need to take them down, I got to take revenge. So that Sefer HaChinuch gives me a lot of chizuk. Whatever happens in your life, and we all get hurt by people, we all get hurt by circumstances, we all get hurt by disappointments or failed expectations, that we should stop and say to ourselves, you know what? If I have to hold someone accountable, I'm going to hold them accountable. But in terms of my own perception, my own avoda of how to absorb what's happened, I have to say to myself, if God did not want this to happen, it wouldn't have happened. If it happened, it was meant to be. There's a reason I needed to experience it. There's something I need to learn from it. But what this episode showed me, that a person could make up a lie, set out on a campaign to spread the lie. And when I tell you a campaign, I don't want to waste our time tonight by sharing with you the campaign. I'm talking about contacting newspapers around the world, Gedolei Yisrael, the Muatzes Gedolei HaTorah. The time forget my time, it's not so valuable. The time that was wasted among Rashi Yeshiva and Talmidei Chachamim and Gedolei Yisrael, who advanced to them was a vicious lie, which Baruch Hashem took 2 seconds to clear up. But shocking is how many, including Talmidei Chachamim, who I was very surprised, who called to read, is it true? I understand this happened. You're calling to find, do you think that's true? Does that make sense to you? Is that consistent with what you know about us, about our shul, about our community? My point is that the responsibility on truth is not only in the speaker or the poster or the writer or the tweeter or the blogger. The responsibility of truth is on us to not take everything we read, everything we're emailed, everything we're texted, everything we're WhatsApped, to not take it as truth just because it arrived. Sefer HaChinuch writes so strongly, fire, that the one who reads and accepts everything as truth is also equally accountable. we're violating mitzvah ayin dalet of hearing one side of the story without the other litigant being present. When someone tells us that lashon hara about someone, when we read a post about someone, when we even read an article about somebody, because even articles today don't have the credibility and credentials they once did, if the other person is not there to say their side, to push back, to make the first side take responsibility to stay true to the facts, we're violating that mitzvah ayin dalet. You can't hear one side without the other person being able to say their side. Not everybody with a keyboard and an internet connection is equal. Not everybody's truthful. Not everybody's honest. And we're living in a world of greater sheker, maybe than ever before. The platform to be able to promote sheker, and the onus and the responsibility is on us to be discerning. And I want to take another example of fake news. This is an example of fake news that I see often. It pains me. I got an email once from a member, a younger married woman in our community. And it was about another topic, but she threw in there how lonely she feels, how sad she is, and how jealous she sometimes reacts when she sees her friends on Facebook. Why? Because everybody puts on Facebook as if they're living the most blissful, glorious, joyful, amazing life. You're always eating at a great restaurant, always returning from an incredible vacation, always so proud, so honored, so humbled by whatever opportunity, by whatever thing your kid did, by whatever thing your spouse did, who professes their love only on the internet. How many people, it drives me crazy every Mother's Day, Father's Day, people profess their love for family members who aren't even on Facebook, will never read that, and likely never bothered buying a card, writing a card, sending a card. It's really about impressing others with our love for others. So what happens? What's the impact on those who read, on the friends who see? This young woman who contacted me said, I feel utterly inadequate. I feel like my life is miserable compared to theirs. What they don't know, that I know in many cases, is the very people who are promoting the loudest and the most often how great their life is, are struggling the most behind the scenes. Now, there's a rule. This is not a rule that I haven't researched it. It's not tested. It's anecdotal. But the people who display affection most in public have the most struggling marriages. It's something that I've noticed often. It's not I don't want to paint the brush across everybody, but sometimes those couples who are the most physically or verbally affectionate in public, they're compensating for what's going on in private. And the same is true on social media. There are articles you can Google about people who were famous with hundreds of thousands of followers or of friends on Facebook, on Twitter, who promoted as if they had the happiest life ever, who then committed suicide, who then ran into... There was a couple who had a travel blog, and their pictures and their articles were all about how they traveled the world, and they were in love, and they were enjoying, and they traveled, and they would put pictures and write articles, and a story came out how they took their blog down, they were in marital counseling and therapy, because really their life and their relationship was miserable. People have an online profile, they have an online persona, and it often is inconsistent with what's happening offline. Why am I telling you this? Because that's also a version of fake news. When you promote your life like everything's hunky-dory, great, fantastic, couldn't be better, also that other people can be jealous of you, want what you have, feel envy, feel inadequate, feel inferior, you are promoting fake news. Nobody ever puts on Facebook the misery. Nobody ever has a picture of their kid throwing up in the corner or having the flu or the thing that went wrong. Nobody ever has the dish that flopped or the dessert that was terrible in the restaurant. Nobody ever puts up on, you know, it's one thing to share. I'm a person who uses social media. I think many of you know that. But we have to share judiciously because we can't promote our own fake news by giving a filtered version of our lives that's inconsistent with the reality that only generates a sense of envy and jealousy and makes other people feel worse about themselves. So fake news is not only affecting presidents and elected officials and different political parties. Fake news doesn't only impact rabbis or communities, but every time we interact publicly, particularly when we're using the vehicle of social media, we have to be very careful about fake news. Okay, that's all number one. That's all number one. Number two, and it's a corollary of number one. Another danger of technology. Technology, as I said, has given us access to unprecedented amounts of Torah learning opportunity. You could hear on everything from the greatest experts, and you could listen to Torah from this moment, other than Shabbos and Yom Tov, for the rest of your life, and you will not have scratched the surface of what's available to listen to learn from, and to touch. And yet, at the same time that it is the information age, there's more information than ever, we are not in the wisdom age. And there is an enormous difference between information and data and wisdom. And that difference is being lost, unfortunately, on many of us. The Gemara says in Sota, Daf Mem Tes, Amud Beis, that in the Yemos HaMashiach, in the footsteps, in the days leading up to Mashiach, chutzpah is going to proliferate. Arrogance, brazenness will know no bounds. And technology has emerged as an amazing vehicle and platform for that brazenness. The abundance of information at our fingertips in an instant gives people an inflated sense of confidence, an inflated status or stature or authority to voice or to weigh in on different things. There's a Harvard Business Review article that's called "The Internet Makes You Think You're Smarter Than You Are." And it quotes from Yale doctoral candidate Matthew Fisher and his colleagues, who asked a series of questions that seemed answerable, but were actually difficult. And the questions concern things that people assume they know, but they don't. Like, why are there phases of the moon and how glass is made? Some people were allowed to look up the answers on the internet, and others were not. And then the researchers asked a second set of questions on unrelated topics. And in comparison with other subjects, the people who'd been allowed to do online searches vastly overestimated their ability to answer the new questions correctly. In other words, our access to the internet, our access to Google something, makes us overconfident, inflate the accuracy or the truth, or overestimate our ability to answer other questions. There's another book by another Harvard professor called "Too Big to Know: Rethinking Knowledge Now That Facts Aren't Facts, Experts Are Everywhere, and the Smartest Person in the Room is the Room." And in that book also argues the same thing. You know, it used to be that we went to school and we deferred to our teacher because our teacher knew more than we do. Today, there's this lack of respect for authority. We're in an age of a crisis of young people having respect for authority, be it teacher, be it parents, be it Rabbanim, be it Mesorah, be it Poskim. And I think that at the core, undermining that respect for authority is, authority used to be built upon and based on life experience, information, in combination, wisdom. Today, you sit in a class, or you sit in a shir, and you say, you know what, I could Google it. And I've got gazillions of terabytes of information at my fingertips, and the person in the front of the room, their information is limited. They're much older. They don't know how to Google. They don't know how to look up. They don't know how to access. I'm young. I can Google. I can discover gazillions of pages of information, and therefore I'm smarter. So my doctor went to medical school, and my doctor did a fellowship and residency and training and postdoctoral training and the chule, the chule. And my doctor has experience of having read 70 gazillion echocardiograms, but I Googled it while I was in the waiting room. So now I challenge the doctor, are you sure I should take this medicine? WebMD says maybe I should take a different one. I don't know. And the doctor says, I've read a few EKGs. I've done the surgery a few gazillion times. But whether it's in medicine or law or Torah, HaKadosha, or in life in general, we mistakenly think that because we can Google, because we can look it up, because we have endless access to information. And that's what the Gemara tells us in Yemos HaMashiach, the chutzpah to think because you Googled and you read the top hits and you don't even recognize the name of the website that you're reading that's giving you all the information that's making you feel like an authority, and now you're challenging the doctor, you're challenging the lawyer, you're challenging your Rav, you're challenging whomever has whatever level of expertise. So there's a false and distorted sense of confidence in our knowledge and the opinions that we derive from them. There's a new book that came out. It's called, I haven't read it, it's called "The Death of Expertise, The Campaign Against Established Knowledge and Why It Matters." The campaign against established knowledge. In other words, you have to defend yourself now if you have knowledge through traditional means. We're living in the age of the death of, no one's an expert on anything. Anyone could Google, so everyone's an expert, which means that no one's an expert. It's the death of expertise. So technology has enabled and empowered anyone with a keyboard to express his or her opinions and to do so confidently and with a voice of authority. It's a corollary of what I told you was number one, that credentials and credibility and expertise and peer review are all things of the past. The new OU statement. How many articles have come out reacting to the new OU statement? There hasn't been time to process it, to think about it, to analyze it, to research it. And yet everybody feels responsible and obligated. I know, I'm related to some. There's some great articles. I'm not telling you they're not great articles. I myself am thinking about a reaction and a response and maybe an article. I'm giving it to you as one example where what happens? Everyone's writing an article. Everyone's sharing those articles. They're all shared equally. And now the Rosh Yeshiva and Poskim have dedicated their lives to Torah study Yomam V'Laila, who are links in the chain of a Masorah. Their opinion is now equated with someone who's thought about it for 5 minutes, hasn't done any research, knows next to nothing, but has a gut, has an intuition, has a feeling, has a thought, and feels credible to write an article which should be equally weighed against that of the cumulative knowledge of the entire Sfarim sale room put together. And that's the age that we're living in. Before the internet and technology, again, I'm not a person who stands up there saying that we should not engage it. I'm a person who engages it highly. So I hope that gives me the credibility to say this. But the danger of technology, before technology, if you were going to publish an opinion piece, an op-ed, a reaction, a response, there were editors. What was your byline? Who were you to offer these ideas? Today, everybody, I told the founder of Times of Israel, in my opinion, he's a fantastic guy, and Times of Israel is an amazing website. I check it every morning. B'shach b'chav kumecha. It's the first thing I do in the morning. The last thing I do at night is to be Doresh Tzion, to check on what's going on in Israel. That's my feeling. But I think he did a great disservice. Because you know what it means to have a blog on Times of Israel? You know what you need to have a blog on Times of Israel? A pulse. That's what you need. A pulse. There's no vetting process. So on the Times of Israel links and the Times of Israel the best of, if you got a pulse, you're on the Times of Israel. And you don't have to have knowledge, experience, a position, credibility. And I think while the website is phenomenal, I think that aspect of it is something which is a challenge. So this is another issue of technology, that the line between news and opinion and fact and fiction and expert and novice and authority and ignoramus is becoming increasingly blurred every day. And again, the onus is on the reader. It's on we, the consumers of information, to say, who's the author of this piece? What right do they have to offer these opinions? What are these opinions based on? What is the knowledge base? What is the life experience? What is the agenda? We, the consumer of information, I think need to take greater responsibility, both from the perspective of fake news and the perspective of knowing where it's coming from. The Gemara Brachos, Dav Zayin Amud Beis tells us, Gedola Shimusha Yosar Milimuda. Having information and data does not make you an authority. Owning a Bar-Ilan CD-ROM, you know what CDs are? Having a Bar-Ilan response on the internet, having the Otzer HaChochma drive. I have in my briefcase the Otzer HaChochma drive. I have 80,000 Sfarim in my briefcase. It's unbelievable. You could be on an airplane, you could be stuck in a waiting room at a dot, you could be wherever. You've got 80,000 Sfarim. Does that make me a posek, an authority, a link in the chain of the Misora? The information doesn't translate to wisdom. One needs shimush tamidei chachamim. You need to not only have the access to the data and the information, but you need to be part of that transmission of a wisdom, of a misora. It's not a coincidence in Avos, Chazal tell us that one of the memches ways, the 48 ways that wisdom is acquired is shimush chachamim. You could sit with a book. I could sit with my Otzer HaChochma and I'll try to plug the USB into my brain and download the 80,000 Sfarim and memorize them. And if I memorize them, that will not make me a posek. It won't make me a person in the authority in the Masora. You need Shimush Chachamim. You need somebody who intuits the Ratzon Hashem, who sees much more distant with a sense of vision. Gemara and Sanhedrin Sadi Tes cautions us from being Megala Panim B'Torah. That you can't arrogantly and inappropriately voice an opinion about Torah, be megala panim b'Torah, when you're not an authority, you're not in a position to do it. The Gemara in Shabbos on Kuf Yotes Amud Beis, listen to this statement. It's mamash. Rabbi Yitzchak said this statement for our generation. L'chorva Yerushalayim ela b'shvil shehushvu katan v'gadol. Yerushalayim was destroyed because they equated a katan v'gadol. Everybody was a gadol, which means that everyone became a katan. Or to quote the Gemara, to paraphrase differently, the death of expertise. Hushvu katan kegadol. The death of expertise. The internet has given equal weight to the opinions of the small and the great. And in some ways, like Brandeis said, that casts sunlight, which is a disinfectant. But when it comes to halacha and hashkafa, it results in a churban. L'churva Yerushalayim. It's a churban when everyone is equal. when everyone is an authority, when there's a death of expertise. So the onus and the responsibility is on us to be discerning and judicious, to be mindful and intentional in everything that we read. And the last thing, the third thing, which I'll tell you in 1 minute because we're already running out of time, is also from this week's parsha, another danger of the internet, which is a danger of interpersonal relationships. You know, there are three realms of relationships the Maharal has on Pirkei Avos, that every time you see the use of the three in Pirkei Avos, it's corresponding with the three realms. We all know two of them, Ben Adam L'Makom, Ben Adam L'Chaveru, between us and God, and between man and man. The Maharal says, and it's so important, that there's a third relationship, Ben Adam L'Atzmo. We have a relationship with ourselves. And every time you see the threes throughout Pirkei Avos, they correspond, look at the Maharal, with Ben Adam L'Makom, Ben Adam L'Chaveru, Ben Adam L'Atzmo. The Slonim Rebbe on this week's Parshu says that, in Parshas Mishpatim, the Gemara says in Baba Kama that kol man de'mehava to be a chassid, anybody who wants to be righteous, a chassid, so one opinion is you should learn milei de'nezikin. Another opinion is learn milei de'brachos. And the third opinion is learn milei de'avos. And he says those three correspond with the three different relationships based on this Maharal. So we focus on relationship bein adam l'makom and even bein adam l'chavero, which is what Mishpatim is all about. We shouldn't neglect bein adam l'atzmo, and that's where this one is the most important. It says in our parsha when HaKadosh Baruch Hu summons, when God invites Moshe on top of the mountain, he says, Vayom Hashem HaMoshe, Ale Eli HaHara VeYesham. Climb on top of the mountain and be there. Ve'etna lecha esluchos ha'evan va'torah va'mitzvah asher kasavti lahorosam. I'm going to give you the most precious treasure I have, the sacred Torah. And the Mefarshim are bothered. Eli, alei Eli hehara. Climb on top of the mountain, ve'yesham, and be there. Well, where else would he be? Why does it have to say that? It's redundant. Alei Eli hehara. Climb the mountain, ve'yesham, and be there. Where else? So I want you to picture this for a moment. Picture the scene. Hashem invites Moshe up to Har Sinai, top of the mountain. He says, come Moshe, I am the infinite, omnipotent, eternal being. I want to share with you the truth and the mysteries of the universe. And Moshe comes up on top of the mountain, and Hashem has to turn to him, and he says to him, Moshe, I know how many congregants you have. I know how many disciples and followers are emailing and texting you. I know how many things you have to do. I know how many followers you have on Twitter. I know how many friends you have on Facebook. I know how popular you are on Instagram. But Moshe, when you're on top of this mountain, Heyesham, be with me. I want you to be present. Don't be distracted. Don't be interrupted. Don't be unfocused. Don't lack mindfulness. I want you to be there. There's a psychologist named Kenneth Gergen, professor at Swarthmore College, and he coined a phrase which I think is great. The phrase describes our world. The phrase is absent presence. Absent presence is the phenomenon of being totally absent in spirit, even when we're physically present in body. So you see somebody in davening, they're in davening, but afterwards they don't even remember opening the sitter or how they got from the beginning to the end. Their mind was elsewhere, they were absent present. You see somebody pushing a stroller, but they're talking on their cell phone, they're absent present. You see a couple who's out for dinner, and they're both, you know, the phone, texting, tweeting, looking, they think that they went out for dinner together, they were absent present. This phenomenon is greater in our life than ever before. Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, I want your full attention. I don't want to compete for your attention. Alei Eli Hahara Ve'yesham. When you're with me, be with me. When you go into davening, put your phone on airplane mode. When you go out, I haven't dated in a few years, coming up on my 20th anniversary, but I can't imagine what dating, do people when they date, put their phone on airplane mode or leave their phone out, or the thing is buzzing and beeping and alerting and vibrating and popping the whole date? I can't even imagine if there's a sense of being there. You probably learn a lot about the other person and what marriage will be like by the experience. I guess that's the benefit of that. But relationships need more than ever that sense of alei elai hahara ve'yesham, to not be absent present, but to be fully present, to be mindfully present wherever we are and whatever we're doing. I have a lot more to say on these subjects. As I say, I've written about them. You can find it online. But thank you very much for having me. I'm happy to answer any questions or entertain any pushback. Otherwise, I'm also happy to go to the forum sale. So thank you all very much. Wishing everybody a fantastic evening.